Hello and welcome to another episode of Young Mash the Podcast. It is good to be back. It's been a while. It's actually been exactly 2 years today since the very first episode I uploaded. So I thought it was quite poetic to come back and record another one and fill you in on the journey that I've been on. It's been a crazy, crazy ride, those of you who know me. And those of you who don't, I think you're in for a shock this episode. I have asked you guys on Instagram to ask me some questions that you would wanted answers to, and I thought, what better way to come back than with a Q&A episode? So, here we go. So those of you who are unaware, in January 2020, I was diagnosed with a germ cell tumour. I was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer at the age of 19, and it completely shook my whole world, obviously. And I know I sound very chipper now, but I was very, very close to dying at the age of 19. They told me that if I had come a bit later, then they probably would not have been able to save me. And although I'm still battling with cancer now, a lot has changed. And it has been a very, very long journey. It has been a very scary journey. And I think that not enough people talk about cancer. And it's a very, very scary word. And the scary statistic is that 1 in 2 people in the UK will have cancer in their life. And for something that is going to happen to 50% of us, it is not talked enough, nearly enough. And so I think it's time I start this conversation, especially about young people and cancer, because it happens a lot more often than people think. And that's the scary truth. I never ever thought that it would happen to me, and yet it did. I think that at a young age, people think that we're invincible and nothing will come and get us. And if we become ill or whatever, it will only happen later in life. And yet that's not the truth. The scary thing with germ cell tumours is that they are created when you're still in the womb. So for my 20 years of age, it has always been inside of me, growing, quietly brewing to find the right moment to attack me and my whole body. And my body has dealt with it very, very well. I was a very healthy kid. I didn't feel ill, really, to be honest, my whole life. I was, you know, sometimes I'd have colds, but that was pretty much it. It never interfered with my life up until I was 19. And in August 2019, I started getting this awful pain in my leg. It was this kind of burning sensation, this nerve pain in my left leg, and I couldn't ignore it up until the point where it became impossible to sit down. My commute to university or to work was about half an hour from my house, and I was unable to sit down for that half an hour journey, and I had to stand because otherwise I was in agony. Same with at work or uni lectures, they became impossible and I couldn't concentrate at all. The only thing I could do was either be lying down to stop the pain or to be standing. And so that was quietly brewing until then it became impossible to sleep through the night. I couldn't lie down anymore. And I was always in pain, and paracetamol didn't help and ibuprofen didn't help, and I tried everything. And all the symptoms online kept telling me that it was probably sciatic pain. And they were right. It was sciatic pain, but it wasn't caused by just sciatica itself. It was caused by a huge tumor that I had in my pelvis that I didn't know about. And then in late November, early December, it got to the point where I couldn't urinate anymore at all. At first, I'd have to constantly press on my bladder, and this urinary retention became so horrible that at work or at uni, I was so embarrassed because I kept running to the bathroom because I was so desperate to pee, and yet I couldn't, and I didn't want to talk to anyone about it. I didn't tell any of my friends about it. And because I was so embarrassed that I couldn't pee. And I think it's so important to be talking about this because no one does. And the only way I could pee was if I pressed really, really hard on my bladder and it was causing me so much pain. And I was so scared of getting an infection. And so that was the only way I could pee. And I don't know why I didn't go to the GP earlier, to be honest. I have no idea why. I just kept thinking that it was stress or that it would go away. Eventually what happened was on the 21st of December, in the middle of the night, I was screaming and crying and I was in agony lying on my cold bathroom floor in December because I couldn't pee, I couldn't go to the bathroom, and I just didn't know what to do anymore. And so that night, I had to go to A&E, to St. George's Hospital in London, and they had to put in a catheter at 19 years of age. And I only got that catheter out in August 2020. So for months, I had this catheter. And it was so embarrassing, and no one I knew had a catheter except old people. And I thought, what on earth is happening to me? And my parents, I think that's when we finally realized that something is definitely wrong. And so I went to the GP and I went to the doctors and I went to a gynecologist, and they checked on this tumor, what I later found out was a tumor, but I found this lump out of my vagina. And I haven't told anyone this story, and I haven't told anyone on such a huge platform. But I think it's so important to be talking about it, and so I'm bearing my all to you guys right now. And so I went to a private hospital, and they said that the only way we find out if this is cancerous or not is if we do a biopsy. And so they put me under in St. Marsden, not St. Marsden, Royal Marsden in Chelsea. And they put me under and they took a slice of this lump and they did all their tests on it. And then they did a huge MRI, which I was in agony. And in MRI, you have to be lying down for about 40 minutes and you can't move at all. And I was in agony and I kept having to jump up, and it was just awful. I was in so much agony. I was in agony in this MRI, and my doctor said that, okay, and we'll call you later with what the MRI is showing us. And it was kind of a moment, very Fault in Our Stars, like, you know, when the guy says, and I lit up like a Christmas tree, because we were on our way back home from the MRI in the car, and the doctor calls us while we're still in the car, and we just knew straight away, I think. And he just says, we have a very, very large cancerous lump in your pelvis. And the biopsy also showed us that it was a germ cell tumor. This tumor was not just a very small tumor in our pelvis. It was 27 centimeters by, I think, about 14 centimeters. It was huge. It was taking up my whole pelvis, my whole tummy. And that was terrifying to hear. But the lucky thing with germ cell tumors is because it's growing the whole time while you're alive since the womb, is that it doesn't interfere with your other organs as much as other cancers do, because it doesn't just appear out of nowhere. Your organs always knew it was there, so it kind of assumed it was another organ. It didn't push anything out of the way, per se. But yeah, it was everywhere. It was growing, you know, it was interfering with all my organs in my pelvis. And also, I had small tumours in my liver as well. And so, at first, they put me in the Royal Marsden in Sutton, which is a teenage cancer hospital. So they put me there. And this is where the story gets even more crazy. Because a doctor came to see me at the Royal Marsden in Sutton. And she sat me down and she said, okay, well, we're going to give you chemotherapy, but what we want you to know is that we think you're terminal. We don't think you're going to make it. We think you're going to die, is what they told me at 19 years of age. And they said, but we'll still give you chemo. And this is when my mum erupted and she said, how do you even know this? Who said that my daughter's going to die? Why are you guys saying this? And she said, well, the tests from the biopsy haven't come back yet. But from my expertise, this is what we think. We don't think she's going to make it. And I could have given up there and then. And I was very close to. But then 3 days later, the results came back. And they said, we were wrong. It's not a sarcoma, it's a germ cell tumor. And it's easily treatable with chemotherapy. And you're going to be okay. You're going to make it. So then they put me to Charing Cross Hospital in Hammersmith because there was a professor there who specialised in germ cell tumours, so it seemed like the right thing to do. And I became a chemotherapy inpatient there for 2 months. I was there. I lived there for 2 months. I didn't get to go home until the 2 months was up. And then I became an outpatient and I would come in every 2.5 weeks for chemotherapy. I lost all my hair and that was brutal. And then in July, I had a huge surgery, which was another huge risk to my life. They said they called me for a kind of a briefing before the operation. And they said, again, we don't know if you'll make it. We don't know if you'll bleed out on the table. We don't know if we'll be able to save your leg and your nerve, because by that point I became kind of a cripple. I had a catheter and also I was much weaker in my left leg because of the sciatic pain, and I was on a huge amount of pain medication and my left foot had become numb. I still can't feel my left foot. Not a lot of people know that. I'm very embarrassed about it because I had to learn to walk all over again. Because I was bedridden for 2 months, I had to do physio and a lot of other stuff that I didn't want to do. But I had the surgery, and obviously I made it to tell the tale. But I had to have, I think, 14 units of blood, they said, or was it 14 litres? Because I did pretty much bleed out on the table. It was very close. But they made it. They took out the tumour, and they managed to save my leg. And they managed to save my nerve, which is great. And from chemo, I managed to, the tumours in my liver are gone, which is great. But then the cancer started growing again in my pelvis, and now I'm kind of back at square one. It's a lot smaller than before, but still, it's still there, so I'm still doing chemo. So after my hair grew back, because I finished chemo in May, I had to start chemo all over again and I lost it all over again. But don't worry, we will make it. So now that you guys know this long, long tale, I think it's time to answer some questions that you guys were interested to know. So the first question is, do you worry about fertility? And they wrote underneath this question, sorry if this is invasive. I guess it is invasive in a way, but I mean, you know what? I'm really happy to answer this because, again, it's not talked about enough. They told me that they don't know whether they can save my fertility. At the moment, I have no idea what's going on. And for those of you who know me, the one thing that I've ever wanted in my life, more than anything, is to be a mum, to have a family. I've always wanted 3 kids, probably 2 boys and a girl, or 3 boys. And so when I first heard that, it was horrible. I cried for days and I didn't know what to think. But then now I've completely settled on adoption, if that's my only option. I don't know. Maybe I'm still fertile. I have no idea. Because what happens is, a lot of people don't know, but when you first start chemotherapy, your body goes into preservation mode. And so for women, that means that a lot of the time, your period completely stops. And so you basically enter menopause. And I went into that period and I had hot flashes and everything, and it was horrible. Hot flashes are horrible. Menopause sounds horrible, and it is. And so it was very, very hard to deal with because I was 20 years old and dealing with something that I shouldn't have been dealing with at my age. But then I got my period back, and then it went away again as soon as I started chemo again. So I don't know what's going to happen when I finish chemo again, but we shall see. But it is something that needs to be talked about. I think with adoption, I would be very happy to adopt. So in a way, I don't mind. But yeah, this was a great question. I'm really glad that I got to answer it. The next question is about my hair. How I felt about losing my hair. See, the thing is, I had to go through this twice. Most people with cancer only go through it once, luckily. And the first time, it was incredibly difficult. I was very, very worried about losing my hair. Those of you who know me, again, you know that when I was younger, I had short hair for a very long time. And then I was very, very excited that it finally grew out to be long. It was about halfway down my back. And a lot of cancer patients, they wear wigs, they wear hats, they wear scarves. And I was planning on doing that as well. So when I first got diagnosed, a charity donated a wig to me. And it was a shame, actually. I'm very grateful for my wig. But the thing is, they asked me questions. They were like, what did your hair look like before? And I sent them photos and I said it was long and brown and wavy. And then I got a short, straight ginger wig for some reason. And it just didn't suit me. But I'm thinking about buying a wig now. But I haven't worn wigs at all this whole time. I've kind of just sported the bald look. And to be honest, I've fallen in love with it now. Sometimes I have days when it's very, very difficult. But then I just remember that it will grow back. And to be honest, I'm very proud of my hair because it grew back very quickly. And now it's starting to grow back even while I'm on chemo, which is really cool. So I'm very proud of my body and I'm very proud of my hair for growing back and kind of persevering despite the odds. But yeah, I think more people should go bald. I think I'm very kind of happy that during lockdown, so many people shaved their head because it made me feel a little less alone in the whole process. Now, the next topic was my university supportive? This is a great question. Again, not talked about enough because my uni wasn't supportive, to be honest. You know what? Let's do a little expose, shall we? I go to King's College London, and when I was diagnosed, I had to tell them that I wouldn't be coming back for studies because when I was diagnosed, I completely shut down. I was nowhere near capable to also do any work for university. And I didn't know if I was going to come back at all. And I had a kind of a realignment on my values. And I thought that actually higher education doesn't seem like the right thing for me right now. And if at all, ever. And they just kind of, my personal tutor helped a little with the process of pausing my education. But I didn't receive an email, anything from university. I got one card that was signed by some of my professors. But again, there weren't many messages in there, it was just signed with their names. And I think when a student is that close to death, I think I expected more from them, to be honest, because I was actually quite involved with the university and I thought that they could have done more. Also, I had a kind of a very unpleasant experience with them because when I paused my degree, I thought that my personal tutor had it covered, and then I obviously wasn't checking my emails because, as I said, I was so out of it. And then one day I decided to check my emails and I see an email from King's College where it says in bright red letters, please reply to this email right now or you will be suspended from university. And obviously that caught my attention and I was so confused. And it turns out that although my degree was paused, no one alerted the finance department and they just thought that I was still basically stealing lectures and not paying for my degree because my student loan was paused. And so then I had to talk to them and get all of that sorted. But that was really unpleasant to deal with because it was just an unnecessary hassle that honestly I shouldn't have been going through at that time. So someone asked me what got me through. And I actually want to combine it with another question, which was, how did you react to the news? Now, I talked a bit about this. I completely shut down. I was bedridden and I just didn't talk to anyone and I went into a state of shock and I was completely numb for ages and I didn't talk about it. I think because I at one point I realized I was so, so close to death and I experienced a lot of suicidal thoughts because I didn't feel like anything was worth it. And what got me through was that my family has been incredible. As many of you know, I'm very, very close to my parents, luckily. I have a great relationship with them, and shout out to young Case and young Dimitri, as I call them. I love them to bits, and they got me through the hardest moments. Of course, because of lockdown, we have been together this whole time, and because we've been shielding, we've been together even more, and they have been incredible. They have really, really, really been incredible. I've been close to them, but I've become so, so much closer to them. And they've just been amazing. In the beginning as well, my now ex-boyfriend, he was incredible as well. And so I'm very grateful for that. My friends as well have really pulled through. So I'm very grateful. And this actually leads me on to another question, which is, how did this affect my relationships? And as I said, I became so much closer with my parents. I became much closer with people that I had lost touch with before, my old friends. I'm really grateful to them. But I also lost touch with a couple of people that I didn't think I'd lose touch with. Family, friends, friends from uni, other friends that I thought would be there for me, but they didn't pull through and they couldn't deal with it. And, you know, it was really, really hard for me to understand at first, but now I just realized that it wasn't for them. They couldn't do it. They couldn't handle it. And it was really, really hard to overcome at first. And there were a lot of sleepless nights and restless nights because of it. But yeah. And also, yeah, my ex, he pulled through at the beginning. I don't think a lot of guys would have been able to do what he did. But then, you know, we're not together anymore. But that's mainly because of lockdown. And I know a lot of people have experienced that with their relationships, and that was really hard as well. But we just weren't right for each other and we didn't make it, but that's okay. I'm really, really grateful to, all the people that have supported me. So thank you so much. I love you all. Someone asked me how I stay so positive and what the hardest part of my journey was. The hardest part, I think, was probably you know what? It's all been awful, to be honest. There's a lot of it that's been so hard. But you know what? I wouldn't take any of it back. I'm glad it happened. And I know that's a very controversial thing to say about cancer, but I am glad it happened because it changed me for the better. It's made me a completely different person. I'm not scared of anything anymore. I'm not shy. I've learned to love myself again. I've become more confident. I've become more resilient. I've embraced myself and all my differences, and I love it. But I think the hardest part was that it feels very lonely sometimes. It's a very lonely thing. A lot of the time you feel like no one gets you, no one understands you, because not a lot of people have been through what you've been through. And I stay positive just because what else is there to do? What else can I do? Do I give up? No. Do I just give up the fight? No. So the only option I have left is to be positive. And so that's what I'm going to keep on doing until I beat this thing. But the hardest part of my journey was probably dealing with fertility and dealing with the surgery. The surgery was brutal. It was a 12-hour surgery, and as I said, I lost lots of blood, and I have a huge scar on my hip and on my belly, and it's huge. And at first, every time I saw it, it made me sob, and I couldn't deal with it. And not many people know this, but they gave me a temporary stoma after my surgery, and I still have it now. Because obviously they had to change a lot of things in my pelvis, and so the only way to save me was by putting in the stoma. So it saved my life. At first, it's not something that many young people deal with, even though I think it's 100 people have a stoma. No one talks about it. And at first, I couldn't deal with it at all. And now it's become part of my everyday routine, and I don't mind it. And I know that one day I'll be having a surgery to reverse it back. Luckily, not many people have a reversal. It's just something no one talks about. And that's why I really, really wanted to put out this episode. And I'm very scared of the fallback that will happen from this, because, as I said, I haven't told even some of my closest friends. But I just want it to be out there, because I want people to know that it can happen. It can happen to anyone at any time. And so you just need to really appreciate what you have. So we're on to the final questions now. Someone said, when people you don't talk to much wish you well, does it annoy you? And what is the best way of talking to someone with cancer? I think just talk to them like they're normal people. I think what was really difficult for me in the beginning was that people, I could feel that my close friends were trying to be overly nice with me. And when all I wanted was some kind of, you know, some banter and someone to take the piss out of me, and yet they were cautious and careful, and I was thinking, you know, but I didn't change, I'm still me, and yet they're being so, so careful around me. And, you know, sometimes it does annoy me when people wish me well, because I think it's the worst when it's people that you don't often talk to, and they don't pop up, and they don't regularly check in on you, and you think, okay, also now you want to know how I am, you know. But no, I think overall I'm still very, very grateful for all the people that have taken the time out of their day to message me, because it makes all the difference. But the worst is when people are nosy and they ask me, how many rounds of chemo do you have left? Or what's this or what's that? And I know they mean well, but you feel, I think when you're poked and prodded by doctors all the time and you feel like you've stopped being a person and you're kind of more of a specimen, you feel constantly observed, and you feel that you constantly have no privacy. And I know I've decided to put my whole journey on Instagram, but I think I've kind of done it so that people could raise awareness about cancer. But you do feel like a human guinea pig sometimes. It's a hard balance to find, but just treat them normally and be there for them. Check in on them. Because trust me, they're lonely and they're struggling, even if they have a smile on their face. Now, the last question made me giggle because it's a lighthearted one. It's completely different from the rest of them. Someone asked me what my favourite song is at the moment. That is a great question. Now, my favourite song at the moment is Something Special by Pop Smoke. I've had this on repeat, and I know that I'm late to the game, but I've had it on repeat this whole time. And another song is Ladbroke Grove by AJ Tracy. And again, I know that this is the oldest song at the moment now, and it's so overplayed. But the funny thing is that this is a little fun fact for you, a little bit of trivia. So since I've been diagnosed, it's been my go-to song with my mum to cheer us up. And it was the first song I danced to, I think, when I was diagnosed. And we'd listen to it before every single chemo to get us in the game and to get us in the mood. And when I finished chemo for the first time in May, we listened to it on the way back home, and we were just sobbing happy tears. And I have this video where I'm singing it at the top of my lungs. And then I decided to post it the next day to my Instagram. And AJ Tracy somehow found the video, and he commented, and his girlfriend commented on it. And the most annoying thing about this is that no one believes me anymore, because he deleted his Instagram at one point, so my comment deleted from the video. But luckily I have a screenshot, so it did happen, and you heard it here for the first time. So it definitely did happen, and I don't want to hear any different. otherwise I'll be upset. But yeah, so those are my two songs, and I'm trying to think of what else. I mean, you guys can follow me on Spotify, Marsha Shishkina, and find all my playlists there, because that's what I do when I'm bored. So that'll be great if you guys check those out. So that is it for today. Thank you so much for listening and for making it to the very end. I'm very grateful for all of you guys. I don't know how often I'll post, and I'm not going to make a promise now, but I just know that I want to come back and I want to get my voice out there. So thank you so much for all of your questions. I loved answering them and I loved telling you guys my story. Let me know what you guys think of this episode. I'd be very grateful. Go follow my Instagram, Young Mash Radio, and my personal Young Mash with two H's at the end. And my Spotify if you want to, as I said previously, Marsha Shishkina. I'm thinking, what else can I plug in? My art account. I've been painting again. Young Mash Art on Insta. I'm kind of really starting a brand here now. But thank you guys so much for listening, and take care. Peace.